This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec. Brought to you each Thursday at 7 p.m. by Power Rents. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080.
Hoo-wee.
The Fan.
Hello and welcome to the Pac-12 Football is Back edition of Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. I have so much to say about Pac-12 football being back and the absolute laziness, the embarrassingly lazy takes from so many West Coast journalists about Pac-12 football being back. So for starters, let's get the guidelines for Pac-12 football being back. The Pac-12 presidents voted today to start the 2020 season on the first weekend of November. The decision comes 2 days before the SEC season is set to begin, and it obviously, again, follows the Big Ten. The Pac-12 has played follower to the Big Ten throughout this year in regards to the pandemic. Each of the conference teams will reportedly play 7 games. The conference title game is set for December 8th. The decision will allow the Pac-12 to be part of the college football playoff scenario. So if a team goes undefeated, there's a chance they could be in. And the seven game regular season will conclude with a interconference postseason where the number one team from the North, the number one team from the South will play each other. The number two team from the North, the number two team from the South will play each other, and so on all the way down. And I'm seeing a lot of takes that are, finally, this is happening. Oh my gosh, the Pac-12 is finally catching up to everyone else and playing college football. Thank God. What was taking so long? Being in the middle of a pandemic is what was taking so long, folks. This isn't some delay that's just absolutely massively crippling to the Pac-12. I know people have tried to say it's crippling to them in recruiting. No one can host visits for the entire year. You heard Brandon Huffman talk about it on Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan. That interview is linked on 1080thefan.com. But he said the same thing I'm telling you and I've heard myself. Recruits haven't cared that the Pac-12 is, in air quotes here, behind when it comes to playing college football. Because the Pac-12 can always spin it as, we're being cautious to protect your kids, to the parents. And to the kids, they're saying, this isn't about you being a amateur/professional athlete. We don't treat it like that, the Pac-12. We treat you like a real student athlete. You can disagree with that. You can think that's absurd. But that's what the Pac-12 can sell on the recruiting trail. The SEC could say, hey, we're playing. Everybody's missing out. Well, they can't have fans at most of their games, and recruits absolutely can't visit their games. So it's not like the SEC is hosting games on Saturdays, and I know they will start hosting games on Saturdays this week, but recruits can't go through their entire season. Official and unofficial visits are banned through the entire year. So this idea that the Pac-12 has been lapped by the rest of the nation is absolutely absurd. Not only that, but the teams that have started playing, I read a stat and it has been, I know there's been changes to the stat, but as of last week, something like 42% of all college football games that were scheduled have been canceled because of coronavirus outbreaks within those football programs. Even the programs that are currently playing aren't playing. This idea that the Pac-12 fell way behind is absurd. They waited, and once they had rapid testing where they could test day in, day out and say, okay, you're positive, you're out, we need to shut this down on a day-to-day basis, until that was in place, it made no sense for them to play. Because they could schedule games and they could have started up like some of these other conferences, and they'd be at 40 to 45% canceling just like everybody else. This idea that the Pac-12 is way behind, to me, is laughable. There are issues with Larry Scott. There are issues with the conference as a whole. There is an issue with the on-field product in the Pac-12, and some of it has to do with a lack of offensive and defensive line talent that has grown along the West Coast and in the West region. You can convince me the Pac-12 is getting lapped on the field. You can convince me the Pac-12 is getting lapped from a business standpoint. You absolutely cannot look me in the eye with a straight face and say the Pac-12 has been lapped when it comes to the coronavirus. Because the teams that are playing now are forced to not play. Again, 40 to 45% of games so far have been canceled. This idea that these teams that started are so much more advanced then the Pac-12 is laughable. They're scheduling games and then not getting to play them. I think the Pac-12 waiting potentially gets to include them in the college football playoff. They will be a part of the college football playoff if they have a team that is deemed worthy. And they waited until they had rapid day-to-day testing. Did they handle the PR issues of it right? No. Is Larry Scott an idiot? Yes. Is he corrupt? Probably. Should he be fired? Absolutely. But these lazy takes that the Pac-12 is embarrassing itself by being the last conference to start is stupid. Because what did going first get you? Half your games canceled. Congratulations. Enjoy your four-game season. Now, we'll see if the Pac-12 can get their games off the ground. But at least they have the testing in place to potentially do it. And I think the Pac-12 has the best chance of all the conferences right now of actually completing their schedule. It looks to me like their testing is the most advanced, or at least as advanced as everyone else, and they're waiting the longest to get that in place and ensure that the players can play. I think being first in this case ended up meaning you just had a four-game season. Congratulations. I hope that works out for you.
True or false, a Pac-12 team that goes undefeated in this protracted schedule should and will get into the college football playoff.
It's that will part that gets me, Will.
It's the not at all. So let me then put it this way. If there is no path to the college football playoff, no conceivable one, even if a team goes undefeated, and we are not playing out of conference games, what is the point?
I don't care what anybody tells you. The point is money, and it's television revenue, and it's money for the schools. That's the bottom line. No, there is no one. There is no one on earth, especially with all these college football. There's a bunch of college football players that are saying, I'm not playing this year. I'm just going to sit out. Penei Sewell's sitting out. Now, he may reverse course, but he did sign with an agent. So the NCAA is going to have to grant him some sort of amendment to their rules to allow him to play. Other Ducks are out. Players from Washington are out. Players from all over the country are sitting out this season. They're not playing a full schedule. Some of the teams have players that are opting out, not because of the draft, but because they don't want to be exposed to coronavirus. Anybody who tells you this is a realistic year and there's a legitimate national champion this year is smoking something. There is no way. There's no way you could look at this at the end of the year. I don't care how it pans out from now on, because we've already seen everyone starting at different times. We're seeing games get canceled. We're seeing games get postponed and moved back. We're seeing players sit out. You're going to tell me at the end of the year that this title is the same as the one Joe Burrow just led LSU to last year? Give me a break. I mean, realistically, I looked at some stat with ESPN, and something like four of the top seven prospects in college football have already opted out for the season. So the four of the seven best players in college football are like, nah, No thanks. Really? And they're all starting at different times. They're all playing a different number of games. And we're going to equate this to a normal national championship. There wasn't going to be a national championship. We're fooling ourselves, folks. And we need to be a little bit smarter.
Well, and let me say this, too. And this is kind of more of a national angle, kind of zooming out a few thousand feet. But what are they going to do about the Heisman Trophy, too? Because most of the time, the Heisman Trophy is kind of the leading narrative of the college football season. It's not always, but a lot of the time it is. Whoever the best player is usually gets it, right? And whoever is the at least best player on the best team, if the talent pool is kind of bad, well, you follow the best team and they kind of lead. I mean, the leading narrative is going to be the coronavirus. So really, anybody who wins the Heisman this year is going to be thought of as a cheap award because, well, it wasn't really that big of a season.
To be completely honest with you, Will, I've thought the Heisman has been a cheap award for a number of years now. And let me give
but
you the...
when do people really earn their Heismans?
I think the last Heisman that I thought was well-earned, really genuinely well-earned, was Charles Woodson's. I thought what
really?
He did, yes.
Well, Cam Newton, come on now.
I like Cam Newton.
That was incredibly well-earned.
I mean,
that team sucked.
They paid for it and he shouldn't have even been playing. So there's
a huge asterisk there.
That's what I'm saying. Before it was, before we really went, okay, this is absurd. He was supposed to be suspended. And then they're like, he's going to win the Heisman and Auburn's the number one team. We can't suspend him. And it's like, yeah, you're right. Let's give him the Heisman. Yeah. I think Charles Woodson's the last one that they went, okay, we're not just going to give it to the quarterback with the very best numbers. We're not just going to give it to the best running back in the SEC. We're going to give it to the player who is the absolute most impactful at his position and has come up the clutch the most often in big games. And that year, it was Charles Woodson. I think that's the last time the award's been legitimate. And there's been years that have been absolutely abhorrent. There was a year where I think it was Mark Ingram won over Toby Gerhardt. Toby Gerhardt had something like 700 more yards and 10 more touchdowns.
Yeah,
he had like a solid, legitimate, good season from a sophomore. If a sophomore had 700 yards and 10 touchdowns, you'd be like, that guy's going to be a borderline All-American by the time he's a senior. He's emerging. He had a sophomore emerging season better than Mark Ingram, and Mark Ingram won the Heisman. You know why Mark Ingram won the Heisman? Because he played at Alabama. That's the only reason Mark Ingram won the Heisman.
I was going to say white running back.
The Heisman hasn't been real in years. In years. I mean, they give it to the best guy on the best team, and that's fine. I'm okay with it. That's fine. Do that. But let's not call it a legit award that we give to the absolute best college football player. There's been years where Ndamukong Suh was the best college football player his senior year. There is no question. He was so much better than everyone else at his position. He was so much better than anyone else in the country as an impactful defensive player. And he didn't win the Heisman. It's absurd. Ndamukong Suh is the year where you go, the Heisman is not about who's the best player. Because Ndamukong Suh was so obviously the best player that it was laughable. And he didn't win it.
What I would say is different now about the Heisman probably since Cam won it, or I don't know what, I mean, you're going all the way back to 1997, but is that it's not so much about an individual award as it is now a narrative award. It kind of just reflects what the year in college football is. Joe Burrow this year, Kyler Murray the year before that. It was kind of the emergence of Oklahoma football on the national stage. Baker Mayfield, he was a huge personality. Lamar Jackson, he was exciting. Derrick Henry, everybody sucked except Alabama as a team.
I think you're right, but I think the component you're missing here, and I feel strongly about this, is barring a monster week one, week two from a guy nobody expected, the Heisman is not a reflection of the narratives. The Heisman is a reflection of which narrative from the preseason turned out to be the most accurate. Now, you have every once in a while a Joe Burrow, but generally speaking, there are like 9 to 12 guys, they go, these 9 to 12 guys could win. And it's almost like, it's just like the top 25 polls in college football. If you start out as the preseason number one and you lose your first two games, you might still be 13th. We didn't earn that number one spot. That number one spot comes from nowhere. The team is different than the team you were last year. So if you're the defending champs and you go 0-2, you didn't earn number one. But we treat those spots like they're established. And the same thing is true of the Heisman. There's almost like a preseason Heisman ranking of 9 to 12 guys. And unless you're a miracle worker, you ain't cracking that spot. It's just going to be who was the best of the 9 to 12 guys we picked in the preseason. Now, this year happens to be a year where if Penei Sewell is allowed to play, he's one of those 9 to 12 guys. They'll say, you know, it's kind of time for an offensive lineman. We're in an advanced stat era. Kind of speaks to the value of O-linemen. Running backs are being devalued across America, although the NFL is already kind of kicking that trend in the butt again. But he gets to be one of those 9 to 12. If you're not one of those 9 to 12, you've got about a 1 in 1,000 chance of winning. So the Heisman is the narrative that people that held up the best from the preseason. That guy from the best team wins.
Unless you're Lamar Jackson.
But I mean, again, unless you're that 1 in 1,000 dude. I mean, yeah. Lamar Jackson ended up being the NFL MVP. So clearly he was a different, whole different breed of cat coming out of nowhere to some extent. And it's weird because his highlight film in high school is ridiculous. It was shared all over the place. I'd seen his high school highlight film on Twitter like 75 different times his senior year of high school, where it was like, look at this dude. Oh my God, he's going to Louisville. He's unbelievable. Sometimes the evaluations are a little bit behind what everybody thinks, or at least the kind of what the highlights seem to indicate. Marcus Mariota's highlight video was like that. There were Duck fans at the time. My uncle was all over that one. He's like, this dude is going to maybe win the Heisman. Look at his highlight film. I don't care what anybody says. There are like four dudes ever that can do that.
I think that, like, when you have,
you're right,
because I've seen these highlight films you're talking about in high school, and I honestly don't think that there's really any excuse that, like, schools, major schools, pass up on guys like that. There just is none. Like, I think that sometimes coaches like to talk themselves out of player evaluations because they consider scheme, and those are really the stupid coaches, the ones that are just so dumb that they don't understand that if somebody's incredibly talented, like, you can just pretty much put them anywhere. Like, that's what James Rogers was. Everybody looked past James Rogers because, yes, he's incredibly short, but he was insanely strong and really fast and quick. And Mike Riley was like, oh yeah, I can put him in my offense. Yeah, we'll figure it out. And then when we fell ass backwards into Marcus Wheaton, it's like, oh, I don't know if he's gonna work with it. Yeah. He's really fast. I think we'll figure it out.
There is a reason sometimes these guys who emerge late slip through, and you say there's absolutely no excuse for a major program to miss on these guys. There is one in modern recruiting, even when they show up late, and it makes a lot of sense. And I've had someone explain it to me, and I was with you, and then somebody explained it to me and went, yeah, you're right. I get it. I'll explain why those guys still today slip through the cracks. Next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. In the last segment, we discussed the return of Pac-12 football. Early November, 7-game season, then a 1-game interconference postseason. Number one in the South plays number one in the North, all the way down to 6th in the North, 6th in the South. Potentially opens up a spot in the college football playoff for a Pac-12 team if they're able to go undefeated. But we ended up on Lamar Jackson and his highlight reel and how he kind of came out of nowhere. Not only did he come out of nowhere to some extent as a Heisman candidate, but he did as a recruit as well. He was not a 5-star recruit. And Will, you had mentioned that there's really no excuse for that. And while I agree with you, a big-time prospect should never, and not the great job by Louisville, right? They identified him. Let's first start there. But there's no way an Alabama, a Clemson, an Ohio State, an Oregon, a Michigan should miss on a kid like that. And the reason is relationships. And the reason is how much recruiting has changed and how much earlier it starts. Everybody thinks that recruiting is about facilities, is about flash, and that oftentimes a senior year really matters. That in high school it does. It's everything, right? If you win a title as a senior, you went out on top. Oregon has 2 spots left in their recruiting class. Oregon State has 2 spots left in their recruiting class. Oregon and Oregon State have had their quarterback positions filled since early summer. Oregon's had theirs filled actually since spring. So if a guy has a huge senior year, which can happen, how many different kids at your high school did you know that were pretty good and they emerged as seniors? You went, dang, that's a whole different kid. Or he grew 4 inches. He's different. Whether it's a kid at your school or a kid in your conference, everybody knows that kid. But modern recruiting doesn't allow for that kid because it's about relationships. You've done your evaluations. You've looked at your board since these kids were freshmen or sophomores. So you've had your board. Oregon's known about Ty Thompson, the five-star quarterback who was, at the time when he committed, like the number 10 or 11 dual-threat pro-style quarterback in the nation. One had him as a dual-threat. One had him as a pro-style. Either way, he was in that 9 to 11 range in the quarterbacks. They've known about him and evaluated him as much better than that and believed in him since he was 15, 16 years old. So you develop that relationship, and not only do you believe in your room and your evaluation, but you've also built this relationship where you say you're our guy. So your whole room buys into this is our guy. This is our guy. This is who we're going after. We've been going after him for 2 years. We love Steve, his dad. His dad's great. He works in produce and da-da-da-da. Or his mom's a teacher, and I've been to her classroom, and she's this.
So Steve's a dope guy.
You build all these relationships. And you believe in your recruiting effort, a multi-year recruiting effort, and then somebody shares a highlight video, and you've already told your quarterback that he's the guy, that he's the number one guy on the board. And not only that, if you're Ohio State or you're Clemson or you're Alabama or you're Oregon, there's a good chance you're already recruiting one of the top five or six quarterbacks in the nation. So a highlight video comes across your screen, and it's going viral, and you guys have to quickly assess, do we break down what we told Steve and Veronica, that recruit's parents, who we told he was the only one? Do we break down the trust that we've built with that recruit? We feel pretty good about him. If we don't get him, we think we will. But if we don't, maybe we can pivot. But we think we're going to get this guy who's the number five quarterback in the nation. Do we really believe this highlight film with this kid we don't know? We don't know his parents. We don't know what his grades are. We don't know what kind of kid he is. Are we sure? Are we sure that gambling on this highlight video, which is incredible, is worth flushing or at least dramatically altering our multi-year plan with quarterback slickback hair and Steve and Veronica, his parents, that we've talked to for multiple years? That's the problem these big-time programs have. If you're an Oregon State, if you're a Cal, if you're a Washington State, you can afford to take those flyers on the Lamar Jacksons when they emerge because you go, we need to hit home runs because we're not in it for the number four quarterback in the nation. We're not in it for the number five quarterback in the nation. And frankly, that's what both Gary Anderson and Jonathan Smith have done a pretty good job of. If you look back to Jonathan Smith's first class, the quarterback he identified late and they went pivot, we like this pivot, was Brock Purdy. And I know he had a terrible opener at Iowa State and people went, oh my God, he's terrible. But entering the season, people were talking about him as a potential first round NFL draft pick. And he was a freshman All-American behind only Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence was the freshman All-American. Across the board, consensus. The consensus second-team All-American quarterback, Trevor Lawrence's freshman year, was Brock Purdy. So they identified him late. Those are the schools that can afford to do that. If you're Oregon, do you want to pivot from Tyler Shuck because Brock Purdy had a monster year at Arizona? No, you've built that relationship. You already have that commit. And that's why those guys slip through the cracks, is those late bloomers, there's already relationships, there's already promises, there's already commitments, there's already a knowledge of we know how much this kid can retain on offense, we know what kind of kid he is, we know what kind of leader he is, we've invested all this time in this kid, and so you don't just pivot for an unbelievable senior highlight video like Lamar Jackson. That's why guys slip through the cracks, and I didn't believe that. I thought, there's no excuse for Oregon if they want dual-threat quarterbacks to not just go after Lamar Jackson. And then when people explained it to me, it was like, well, the reason is we've got these relationships. We don't know. He could, and any quarterback that you find late, he could have off the field issues. He could have issues retaining an offense. We don't know the kid. So he's totally a question mark, but we know this kid, we know his situation. And that's why it helps Oregon State, it helps Washington State, it helps Cal. They can gamble on those kids. It's much harder for the elite schools to gamble on those kids.
Let me tell you something. If I was part of a mid-tier blue blood program, I'm talking
for football.
Yeah, for football. Okay. Like I'm not talking Clemson here. I'm not talking Alabama. I'm talking something
like a Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm like a Wisconsin. I'm a Michigan State.
If you're Minnesota with PJ Fleck, you gamble on those guys?
Or you're like TCU, right?
Okay.
Without the admittance restrictions. I'm taking a chance on literally every dude whose highlight tape looks like it came out of Mix One.
I'm sorry, and one.
Like, and one.
Dude, even and one is showing your age. Like, who was the basketball player that wore and one shoes in the playoffs and just got punked on social media? And one was cool when we were kids.
Dude, and one was dope.
That's what I'm saying. He wore and one shoes this year's in the playoffs, and he, like, went viral for being a joke.
That's not a joke. That's cool. You know what sneakers were a joke? Did you ever have Dunks?
No. Are you talking about the ones you pumped up?
Well, I mean, there was a lot of those, but, like, they were specifically called Dunks.
No. No, I never had Dunks.
Yeah, Dunks were not great shoes. Those were ones that you'd get laughed out of the building for wearing, or Dunks.
I
would always look at kids wearing and ones, and I would kind of be like, wow, they must be a little hardcore. I'm not talking full hardcore here,
they're
but
a
enough
street
that, like,
baller.
Yeah, like I'm worried to talk to them because at this point, like, they might know something really cool about basketball.
Excuse me, sir. I'm from Lake Oswego, and I'd like to know what your off-court, in-the-street basketball name is. Is it something like Skip to My Lou? It's like, dude, I just bought these at Costco.
Do your parents own, like, a used Audi? Because that's kind of intense. That's what I would say.
That's what
them.
You'd say.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Do you remember getting the East Bay catalog and it being, like, the biggest deal ever?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Every single time. So East Bay catalogs were sick.
My stepson is now 15, 16, and he still gets the East Bay catalog, looks through that thing. And like 5 years ago, for $25, they did like a remake of the pumps that actually, like, you pushed basketball.
Yeah.
I almost bought them.
You should have.
For like $25. It's like, are you kidding me? I would have, if they'd have been $150, I'd have been like, I kind of want those. I should have just bought them. And then I was like, something's got to be wrong with them if they were $25. But the ones that you actually like, just for the nostalgia and the conversation of it, are those the inflatable tongue shoes? Like, yes, I bought them from East Bay.
I feel like the only amount of money that you can surpass to make it not worth the frivolous buy is $50. If something is over $50 and I know heading into it with 60% chance that this is going to suck, like, I won't buy it. If it's $45 and I have that same feeling, I'm pulling the trigger.
I think that's a good amount.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way. And, of course, that kind of fluctuates with whatever you're buying, right? Like, you know, TV or something like that. But then again, I don't flippantly buy televisions.
What about this? Restaurants. Portland, known for restaurants. What's your cutoff of how much you'd spend on a meal with no recommendation? Like, I wouldn't go to a really nice, like, I wouldn't take Chantel out to an anniversary dinner that was like $120 a plate if somebody hadn't told me it was pretty good. Or,
oh, no.
You know what I mean?
Well, I'm not doing $120 a plate anyway.
Okay. Well, to each their own.
I'm cheap.
For an anniversary, maybe. No? Okay.
That's what Chevy's
Have you ever
for.
Been to Fogo de Chao, by the way?
No.
Bro, you have to go to Fogo de Chao.
I do love the name of that restaurant.
Fogo de Chao is a Brazilian barbecue place. And they give you a card, and on one side it's green, and on the other side it's red. And if your side is on green, they have waiters that bring you, like, garlic-stuffed filet mignon, Parmesan-crusted pork shoulder, all kinds of sausages, all kinds of steak, all kinds of chicken. And they just stack food on your plate. Like, every few minutes they come by and give you, like, a small slice or two of whatever meat you want. And you can turn it to red and sit and order a drink and hang out for like 30 minutes, get second hungry, eat.
It's kind of like a take on tapas.
Eat again. Fogo de Chao is unbelievable.
Huh.
High recommend. It's like $50 or $60, but it is all you can eat high quality, like steak, all kinds of stuff. It's great.
Without recommendation, it has to be under 20 a plate.
Okay.
I don't care. I would go
a little higher than that for like maybe some Italian food.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard to mess up Italian food though.
That's what I'm saying. It'd have to be something that's like, okay, you're not going to screw up Italian food. If I get lasagna, it's not going to be an abomination.
No. With enough sauce and enough sour cream.
Although I did get a recommendation from a well-known writer at the Oregonian, and I got food poisoning eating at the restaurant. The Italian restaurant.
Did you rub it in their face afterwards?
No, I didn't. I never said anything.
Why?
Because I felt bad.
Well, you should tell him because he's probably still going around recommending that. he's probably still going around shooting from the hip.
Nemec loved it. Great. No.
Let me tell you something. Nemec loved it so much, I never heard another word from him about
What's
it.
What's funny is someone I knew, like I think it was my mom, but it's been so long that I wasn't sure. I think my mom went there and got sick as well, like 6 months later, or like it was longer, you know, it was like after, but I still remembered. And she's like, I went to that new Italian. I got sick. And I was like, me too.
Yeah. See, this is why you need to go back and tell that guy. Cause he's probably done it to like five other people.
Probably.
And they just are like in your position too, where they're just, they don't feel bad. I feel like if somebody recommended a restaurant to me and I got food poisoning, I'd go right back to him. I'd even text him maybe the next day and I'd be like, that place sucks. And I got sick. Jerk.
Will, you're a Beaver fan.
Yeah.
You're rocking a Beaver shirt today, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. The Beavers recruiting class right now is last in the Pac-12 and 96th in the nation.
Okay. So we're fair.
I'll explain why it's much, like 40 spots, better than that in reality. Next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 10 of the Fan. Will, I promised you that despite the fact Oregon State's recruiting class is 12th in the Pac-12 and 96th nationally, the lowest in the history of the program since the dawning of modern recruiting rankings? How do I say that? The start of modern recruiting rankings? I like dawning better, to be honest with you.
Since things sucked?
Oh, 97th. It updated today. Somebody else got a commitment. So 97th. But that's very misleading. And part of the reason is that Oregon State only has 8 commitments. And most of the programs ahead of them are up to 15, 16, 17. And you can think, well, that means nobody wants to go there. No, Oregon State only has about 10 spots. And as I've mentioned before, they like to leave a couple spots open for kids who potentially break out late. In this class, they've got Demir Collins, an all-purpose running back who's the second highest rated running back in program history. They've got Easton Mascarenhas, who at the time of his commitment was the highest rated high school defensive prospect in program history. And Sam Vidlak, a quarterback who I think probably deserves to be a 4-star prospect. So if you go by average rating per commit, they're right in that 50-60 range. That's not great. That's not stellar. It's 9th in the Pac-12. It would be 12th in the Big 12, which actually has 14 teams, right? Isn't that how that works? So it's not great, but it is progress. And I think you're seeing when you get a good running back, a 4-star running back from within your home state, you get an elite linebacker out of California, and you find a quarterback you really like from in-state, and Boise State's in for him, and you beat them for him, you're doing better than you were last year. And I think that's been the story so far of Jonathan Smith's tenure. He hasn't taken 15 steps forward. It just seems like every year Oregon State takes a step forward without really a step back. And that's what this class is. The one caveat I would say to this, and it really bothers me because I can't stand, and the one way that I try to separate myself from paid recruiting sites, I'm not going to spin it for you to be positive. I'll tell you the truth. You can be mad at me. The years that Helfrich was a terrible recruiter, I said it. Oregon fans, I got multiple emails every week that said I was an idiot. I was a fool. I had no idea what I was doing. I should not do recruiting because I was new at the time and I didn't know what I was talking about. Now everyone just accepts Helfrich was a bad recruiter. I've said Gary Anderson needed to hire a new recruiting team, that he wasn't very good at it, that he couldn't connect with people. Sure enough, he fell by the wayside. I've said Oregon State's doing much better, but they don't have a closer in this coaching staff. They don't have a guy that slams the door shut with high-quality kids. 24/7 Sports has recruiting rankings for all the assistant coaches. Oregon or former Oregon coaches make up the entire top 5. Oregon State does not have a coach, an assistant coach, in the top 30. There are 30 better closers in the Pac-12 conference than the first guy for Oregon State. That's a problem. That needs to be fixed. So there is that caveat. The other caveat, and I hear this all the time from the Oregon State pay sites and the people that try to spin it to positive. This is the highest average rating per commit in program history. This year, they've never had a class ever that has a higher average rating than this year. And let me tell you why that is completely, absolutely, unequivocally false. Ratings have dramatically, and by the way, I checked with 24/7 on this and said, am I right here? Am I looking at this right? And they said, yeah, it's actually an issue with our site. The Pac-12, first of all, there are more four-star prospects than there used to be. So in the class of 2004, I think that's a good example. Oregon State finished with a top 30 class. They only had 2 4-stars, but they had 7 guys that were top 350 recruits. In today's era, there are something like 380 four-star prospects. So if that 2004 class were now, Oregon State would have had 7 4-star prospects in the class of 2004. But because they didn't have as many 4-stars and they didn't have as many 3-stars, the class's average rating isn't as high. Seems pretty simple, right? The other thing 24/7 Sports admittedly has done is changed the distinction of what it means to be a 3-star prospect. A 3-star prospect now means that you are a Power 5 conference prospect. So if you're committed to Oregon State, you by definition, by their definition of a 3-star prospect, become a 3-star prospect. And I've even seen the most positive of Oregon State fans joke that when they get an unrated kid, it is only a matter of hours, and literally it is, before 24/7 Sports, sight unseen, often bumps him up to a 3-star prospect. They have, I'm looking at their class, they do not have a single 2-star prospect in their class. They did when those kids committed. In fact, they had multiple. But as soon as they committed, they got bumped to 3-stars. They didn't used to have that practice. Go back to that class of 2004. There are guys that are equivalent talents who are not rated. Because if they didn't get eyes on them to evaluate them, they just didn't rate them. And it dropped the average down. Oregon State's class from 2004 was rated an 82. This class is rated an 85. That class that had an 82 grade in 2004 would in modern times have 7 4-star prospects on it. This class, if you go by composite ranking, has none. And the gap between an 85 and an 82 in a modern recruiting ranking is something like 50 spots. It's a massive gap. They've completely overhauled how they rate their average rating per commit. And so when people say Oregon State's average rating is the highest it's ever been, you have to understand that in the last 2 or 3 years, every single unrated Oregon State kid and every single high 3-star Oregon State kid got a massive bump up from where that same kid would have been rated 5 years ago. Because 24/7 Sports figured out that if Oregon State gets all these commits and they're not rated and 2-stars, people don't get excited. No one gets excited if Oregon State lands 7 not rated kids. But if they land 7 3-star kids who are newly minted 3-star kids, it's a different way to market it. And because the 3-star distinction is no longer we deem this kid a Power 5 conference prospect, but instead is now this kid's scholarship offers make him a Power 5 conference prospect, it is inherently true that every single Pac-12 commit is at least a 3-star prospect now. That didn't used to be the case. You used to see multiple Oregon classes, multiple Oregon State classes with 2-star guys. Jarris Byrd was a 2-star prospect. I think Patrick Chung was a 2-star prospect. There's been multiple 2-star prospects along the way. You won't see that anymore. They've done away with the 2-star Pac-12 prospect. They've just completely done away with it. That's why it's disingenuous for people to say this Oregon State class has its highest rating per commit ever. In that 2004 class, they had 7 guys rated higher than the highest guy in this class. But this class has a much higher average rating. Why? Because they've changed the way they do the ratings. It's really important, and it's really nuanced. And hopefully, that's why you listen to the show. So you can say, Nimmick, make sense of this. 12th in the nation, highest average commits ever. Highest average rating per commit ever. I don't know what to make of that. Those are two absolutely different concepts. Well, the reason is they have eight commits. So that national ranking of 97 and that Pac-12 ranking at 12 isn't right because most of the conference is going to have 20 to 25 kids. But it is also equally wrong to compare it by average rating because the way they do ratings and average per kid has changed dramatically. So what should you take from all the numbers I've just given you, which is a lot, especially over radio, because no one has a pen and paper. Who's driving anyway? What you should take from this class is that Jonathan Smith took a step forward. There are positives. Is it as bad as the last place conference or the last place class in the Pac-12 and the lowest rated class in program history? No. Is it as good as being the best class by average rating in the history of the program? No. It's just about dead smack in the middle. And that's progress. They still need to get a closer. They don't have a guy in the top 30 assistants by 24/7's recruiting rankings, by assistant coaches in terms of their ability to get kids. That's not good enough. It's just not. In fact, it's kind of embarrassing. It's unacceptable. You can't have every school in the conference, seemingly, on average, have 2.5 recruiters better than your best recruit. You can't have that and be competitive, especially if you're coming from Oregon State. If you're at Oregon State, you need to have the elite recruiters because it's harder to recruit to Oregon State than it is to recruit to USC or Washington or Oregon or Stanford. It's harder. They've got to get better in that area. But this class is a step forward. They need to build on it. They need to have a good season this year. They cannot go 1-6 and call it progress. But if you have a successful on-field season this year on top of this recruiting class, you can call it a step forward for Jonathan Smith. You had a good question before the show. What was your question?
You mean the NFL lie?
I mean the NFL lie.
What? Hold on, I got to read it from Twitter.
I believe it was...
It's difficult to phrase it.
What lie could you make up about the NFL... and the NFL players or the history of the league that people would believe, but would not lead to enough suspicion that they would go, I don't believe that, and would Google it.
Give me your most believable NFL lie, something that wouldn't spur a Google fact check.
I've got one. I think you do too. We'll talk about it next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. So you had an interesting topic before the show. And you said, what? Read it again, because it is nuanced, and I want to get it right.
Give me your most believable NFL lie, something that wouldn't spur a Google fact check. My example to you before the show was, hey, did you know Denard Robinson still plays for the Jaguars?
You mean Shoelace?
Shoelace? Denard Shoelace Robinson? Yeah, he's on the Jaguars.
Here's the problem, though.
He gets a few touches.
I immediately said, no. So that one didn't work.
I got Mike, though.
You did get Mike. Mine would be, and I already know the text line's going to blow up because somebody mentioned this on the text line already today, that my lie would be that Aaron Donald, because he did kind of seemingly come out of nowhere as a draft prospect, was never a first-team all-conference guy. But then somebody said on the text line that if, you know, Ndamukong Suh, I said, should win the Heisman earlier. He was like, Aaron Donald should have absolutely won the Heisman. I looked it up, and he won, like, every award. So, his senior year. So, that probably doesn't work either. This is trickier than I thought it would be.
It can't be so outrageous that, like...
People are like, no. Are you sure I'm looking that up? I don't believe you.
Again, it has to skirt that line between, like... Okay, I'm open to that, but you know something? I'm not going to take the effort to actually fact check you. I'm just going to assume you're telling the truth.
If I told you Josh Allen was a rodeo champion and a football state champion in high school, would you look that up or would you just believe it?
No, in fact, I would believe that. And
I think it might even be true, and I just made it up.
I just wouldn't. It wouldn't do enough for me.
To move the needle.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I also would accept it and go, wow, that's kind of interesting. Sure. Whatever. If that's what it is, okay. I had some other ones because I tweeted this one out and I had a couple.
Somebody said, despite coming into the league 20 years later, the Ravens have more wins than the Buccaneers.
And then my counter to that is the Ravens didn't just come into the league not too long ago. They transformed from the Browns. So they're one of the oldest franchises in NFL history. So that one's flawed. This is hard.
Text line 503-250-1080. Aaron Rodgers wasn't on any of the all Pac-10 teams.
What if I said Chase Daniels has made the most money per pass attempt in NFL history? Because he keeps getting contracts and he never plays. He's been a perennial backup his whole life.
Yeah, that...
Because
I feel like then I'd have to look it up because now you're talking money.
The guys that get a lot of money are starters and play a lot. But he got a rookie contract, didn't last very long at all as a starter, and has continued to get multiple contracts as a backup quarterback and has seemingly never played.
Yeah.
I think that one is interesting.
I'd have to look that one up because it involves money. And for me, for some reason, that like... That's always something where, like, I'm kind of interested in it. Like, who is the highest paid quarterback right now? Or who is the highest paid this right now? So that's an interesting one to me. I also had one that I do love that's Julian Edelman has worn the same pair of underwear unwashed for every game of his NFL career.
See, I just believe that.
I do, too.
Because he's gritty and he's tough. And he overcomes his lack of athleticism with grit and discipline.
Yeah,
he's
sure.
A gym rat.
It's also just funny.
Well, that's what everybody says about white receivers, right? All those things. Thank you for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.